This week, we're talking about McLaren's new hypercar, plus how you can live out your initial D fantasies. We also have a special guest today who has been a stunt coordinator on everything from Knight Rider to The Fast and the Furious. It's Andy Gill. But first, Michael Jordan is suing NASCAR? Welcome to the Big Three.
Hey, we're back.
We are back. Hello, everybody. For our first-time listeners, if you've never listened to Big Three before, welcome. We talk about the car news, so you don't have to. Be sure to like and subscribe and help us grow. Guys, feels good to be back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Nolan.
I'm here.
Wife guy.
Married man.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, a few things have happened.
Ring.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Yeah. Dude, it feels really good to be back, actually.
Yeah.
It's been about a month, I think, since I have been on the show.
Yeah. Does it feel like you drop back into it pretty easily?
Feels great. It feels good. I think it's going to be a great episode. But yeah, what happened? So we went to Germany.
We went to Germany. You got married.
Yeah. I went to Germany. Then the next week we shot High Low in the morning on a Monday morning. Then the week after that, I got married. Then last week, High Low again. So then here we are.
Here we are.
So actually on that note, before we get into the show, I've got some stuff some gifts for you guys. The first one is actually not a gift. The first one is not a gift because it's actually something that Max just bought.
I know what this is.
In Germany, and I brought it back to the U.S. for him. So he didn't have to lug it all around Europe.
Yes.
Here's this is the Volkswagen ketchup.
Volkswagen makes ketchup.
Yes.
This actually has a real part number from Volkswagen
everything. The be careful the label because it was like in my fridge and then it got all condensation. So the label's kind of a little tore up. I'm sorry.
Is it curry?
Yeah. So that's what we found out is like the currywurst over there in Germany. I don't know if you guys talked
like
about Germany at all.
A little bit.
But what you do, you get your sausage, your brat. You get your brat. You put your ketchup on it.
Yeah.
By the way, hot ketchup. They heat the ketchup up.
What? That's right. Yeah.
It's
and they
like
just
hot.
Douse it in there. So we went to the Volkswagen factory and went to their cafeteria for lunch and we just got this big ass sausage.
Dude, it was
doused
like a foot
in ketchup,
and a half long. Yeah.
And then you sprinkle some curry powder on there.
So it's
like
it's pretty good.
Opposite
so that's
of Chicago.
Basically. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Definitely.
Wow. No
very
bun.
Much so. But there you go. There's your ketchup there.
Yeah, and so Volkswagen does manufacture their own ketchup. Like I said, this has a part number from Volkswagen and they make tons of the stuff. You can find it everywhere around
there. I think like a week ago or 2 weeks ago they gave that away for free online. Like you could have ordered it and got a bottle for free, but if you didn't, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Give it.
Yeah.
So there you have it. This was one of the more, I mean, I shouldn't say this was one of the more, I was very excited to find this in the Volkswagen store, personally.
Oh, we didn't even find it in the store. We found it at like at the Wolfsburg store across from our hotel, had like, you know, football jerseys and like
Volkswagen paraphernalia.
Yeah, I got a Wolfsburg magnet for my fridge. And then Max, you got your ketchup.
It's got a little chili pepper with
wheels
on
it. Look at
what
that.
What does that mean?
Who knows? And then Joe, for you. For those of you, I don't know how much you talked about my wedding on the show, but Joe, you were the officiant for my wedding.
Yeah.
And you know, I got all my groomsmen a Seiko watch, but I also figured it was appropriate to give you one as well
for
all the work you did.
Thanks,
prepping,
man.
The ceremony is a great ceremony.
Very sweet.
Big
dog. Look at that.
Yeah. There you go.
Look at that. That's sick.
I have a Seiko just like that. Mine's gold, but I couldn't get enough gold ones in time. They were out of the gold options.
This one's great.
I love my Seiko because everyone thinks it's a really expensive watch, but it's like $100. So
I will love and cherish it. It's funny that you bring us gifts because I also brought Max a gift.
Oh.
It's just a gift giving day, I guess.
Wow.
Cool.
It's because you moved into a new house. You're going to need a new duvet cover.
Whoa.
What is this?
A new duvet? Is this a Wild Hogs duvet?
Open it up.
Is this a Wild Hogs duvet? Where did you find this?
The internet.
Okay, so we got pillowcases. First, we got a...
What the hell?
How did you know? Oh, this is a nice thread count too.
I know, right?
Okay,
it's sublimated.
Another pillowcase, and then here's our duvet. Whoa,
yeah, it's massive.
What the? Why does this exist?
Whoa!
Oh my god! Wow!
So you can cuddle with William
H.
Macy.
Yes,
right here.
Dude. All right, this dojo just got a little more swagged out. What? Yeah, I think the bachelor pad's complete.
Oh God,
now.
Look at him! Look at how he's got like
he's got sores.
Dude, me and
fell
my
off
friends,
his hog. Yeah.
Me and my friends actually went to go see Wild Hogs opening weekend after school. That is hilarious, dude.
Wow, thanks.
Are you gonna put that in your bed, Max?
I might have to. I'll make sure to update the Slack with
dude,
the
yeah,
photos
please.
Of my
oh
bed.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks. Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome. I know it's a,
the
mostly
Wild Hogs
an audio
duvet
format.
Cover stays on the bed during sex.
Yeah, we're gonna be getting these real dirty soon.
Oh my God. Oh wow. Where'd you find that?
What is the internet?
Is this, like a, Temu special?
eBay is my wonderland. That's, I also got you that hat, which I haven't seen you wear to work. Or
yeah,
in public
Joe
at all.
Got me a hat for the podcast. It's a real podcast where this guy interviews people in the porn industry, and it's a hat that looks like it's covered in a big cum shot.
Cool.
So thanks
cool, yeah,
for
I wonder
that,
why
Joe.
I haven't seen that around the office. Yeah,
he gave it to me the first time I met his new son.
It got delivered as we were hanging out, so what am I not going to give it to you?
That's hilarious, dude. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Cool. Well,
amazing.
Thanks. I got my ketchup, and I got my... duvets.
Your duvet. Yeah,
don't mix those two.
We have weird stuff around the office. Like, we have a death cab for cutie, like, blanket in the conference room for some reason.
No, wasn't it a rug?
It's, nah, I don't think, maybe it is a rug.
We were looking at.
You're right, it is a rug because I used it as a blanket when we did the video where I was sleeping at the office because, like, first night in the office, I was like, there's no blankets here because it's an office. Yeah. So I just grabbed that thing and, like, used it.
Oh, that's really funny.
Anyway, wow, what a start. Let's get into some news. Michael Jordan's NASCAR team 2311 Racing has filed a lawsuit against NASCAR. This is Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin's joint venture. For those of you who haven't heard, here's what's going on. So NASCAR has been in a two-year-long battle with team owners over a new charter agreement. And this is basically, charters in NASCAR, according to Inc.com, are a, quote, quasi-franchise system that provides teams a percentage of overall revenues. Mm. It's kind of complicated.
Like a fraternity of speed.
Well, a charter. Yeah. Rather than deal with owners collectively, NASCAR used a, quote, divide and conquer strategy to get deals seen as more favorable to the league than owners. NASCAR basically gave them an ultimatum, and 13 of the 15 teams signed on, but Front Row and Jordan's 2311 are the only two teams that haven't signed this charter agreement. The lawsuit alleges that NASCAR has a monopoly and unfair negotiating position, which makes the environment anti-competitive. NASCAR teams are also required to buy parts from NASCAR-approved vendors. So
it is a monopoly.
It's a bit, yeah.
Yeah. I don't have much to say other than I don't like monopolies. And the game kind of sucks, too.
Yeah, you're not a big Monopoly fan. Anyway, sorry. yeah, I mean, I don't really have... I don't.
Michael Jordan, billionaire.
NASCAR, also billionaire, though. The exact details of the deals are unknown, but it's likely that the rev sharing is very uneven. NASCAR isn't exactly hurting for cash either. They recently signed a new media deal worth $7.7 billion, 40% more Shit. Than the previous one.
What? With who?
I think Fox.
Unreal. So yeah. People must be watching, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
NASCAR's hot right now.
Good for NASCAR.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of billionaires, did you guys see Mark Zuckerberg's new car?
I did.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg commissioned West Coast Customs to build a stretched out version of a, what is it, a Cayenne?
Mm-hmm.
So Mark,
yeah, because his wife wanted a van.
Yeah, let me say that again. So Mark Zuckerberg commissioned West Coast Customs to build him a stretch limo version of a Porsche Cayenne. So it's basically like a minivan Porsche. Yeah. And he is trying to, he's like, I don't, he's just trying to be this hype car
it's
dude.
A,
right it, now.
I mean, it's a rebrand kind of deal, PR move, I think.
I think
obviously.
He saw that AI picture of him with the chain and like the broccoli haircut.
I mean, honestly,
he's like, I want to be that dude.
That could be a thing too.
Yeah.
Well, he's also like tweeting with Brian Scotto right now. They're having conversations about like what cars they think are cool.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. It's really weird.
Whoa.
I think, It's a cash grab. It's a cash grab. Yeah, it's a, yeah, PR campaign. I mean, he's like, yeah, the haircut, honestly, looks pretty sick. Also, he's been doing that. He's been hitting that jujitsu. He's been getting his belts.
I really want to
see him. He's been competing. That's pretty cool.
Elon.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know if the Porsche minivan move is.
He also made sure to include in the tweet that he bought a manual transmission GT3 yes. for uh-huh. him.
Mm-hmm. So for the boys.
Mm-hmm. yeah, no auto tragics in that garage.
I think the car looks goofy, but it's like a fun idea, and it's such a departure from his like meat smoking days where he's just like this robot that like yeah. is trying to use human words. Well, I think it's fun that he's becoming a car guy. If I had a $1 billion, I would definitely.
I'm gonna make say that's what you do cars. When you get a bunch of money is you start inevitably start buying a bunch of either cars or wine. I watched Jimmy Butler's like Architecture Digest home showcase. He, first of all, Jimmy Butler, very funny, but
I love him.
He's like a huge wine guy. In his house, he has a huge wine cellar with like I want to say over 6,000 bottles of wine.
Wow,
and I think that's just something.
Oh, that lasts me 2 weeks.
that's how many I needed to buy for my wedding.
Oh, did you have any excess liquor, by the way?
Yes. Okay. So most of it is in my storage unit. Not too much, though. I did end up pawning a lot of it off to some of my groomsmen as we were leaving. But no, you guys made a good dent.
So we were trying to figure out exactly how many bottles of wine and booze we needed for his wedding. And we're doing all this math and we're like, yeah, that seems right. That seems right. Yeah. And then we're like, wait, hold on. Let's figure out how many drinks this is and then divide it by the number of guests. And it was like 6.5 drinks per guest. That's like a Midwest wedding.
That's a Midwest wedding, bro. Yeah.
Out here, like, people have like 2 drinks and that's it. And so we're like, we should probably cut down.
Also, we weren't sure because my wedding was on a Thursday. By the way, Thursday wedding.
It's a good.
Underrated. Because awesome. One, we saved like, seriously, $35,000 on the venue alone. Wow. Yeah, because if it was a Saturday, it'd be crazy expensive.
Yeah,
so we saved a shit ton of money on that. This is some wedding tips for you guys, any of you engaged out there. Thursday wedding, underrated, but because of that, we're like, okay, are people going to drive home immediately afterwards? But it seemed like most people there made like a weekend out of it because we're down near Temecula. Yeah, so people mostly stayed. So.
I stayed at the casino and I won $100 in a slot machine.
There you go,
nice dude,
nice.
Well, it's great because you get to recover on Friday, and usually I don't know about you guys, but I was like, oh man, I gotta go to work tomorrow, and then you realize you have a whole weekend ahead of you to recover, and it's great.
The real gift was the 4-day weekend, Nolan. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, so ended up spending we went to Costco and spent only like $980 on liquor. People were telling me the whole time like, oh, like Gabe, one of our camera guys, was like, you're going to spend like $3,000, which he probably did on his wedding because I think he had a bigger wedding, but also, got a little crazy, it sounded like, at his wedding. But
yeah,
it was pretty cool. Anyway, why are we talking about wine? Oh, yeah, Jimmy Butler, Mark Zuckerberg, broccoli hair, AI. We made it back. Here we are. Okay, next story. All right, Initial D fans, if you watched our We Drove Every Initial D Stage 1 Car video and ended up wanting an AE86, this next story might be helping you out, because guess what? You can buy one off Alibaba. Right now, you can pick up a Repro AE86 chassis on the website for as little as 8,500 bones.
Mm. That's a lot for Alibaba.
That is a lot. You're right.
And when you say a Repro, you mean a completely brand new manufactured shell of an AE86.
Brand new manufactured ? By who?
Hmm.
I don't know. It's not a Toyota chassis.
No.
It's not a legit one.
You know, it's just going to be tack welded and made out of the worst metal.
You're going to have to maybe go through it yourself and make sure it's good. But there is a catch, okay? You can't just buy one of these things off Alibaba. You have to buy a minimum of 5 chassis.
Yes. One for each of the boys.
Like Costco.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a system here. From 5 to 9 chassis, it's $9,500 each. If you buy 10 to 14 chassis, those go for $9,000 each. But if you buy 15 or more Repro AE86 chassis from Alibaba.com, $8,500 bucks.
Wow. And you still have to get probably everything else, engine, suspension, interior, probably just some exterior stuff.
It's just the shell. That's right.
Interesting. Who is the target buyer for this?
That's a great question. I could see, look, maybe here's the play. Start a small business, get a loan, buy 15 of these things, And then you're going to need a lot more capital for the next part of this.
Yeah. So go back to the bank.
Go back to the bank. Say, hey, I just spent like 50, how many, like 15 or more.
It's over 100 grand.
Okay. I just dropped a lot of money on some questionable chassis on Alibaba.com. Give me some more money so I can build these cars and do like a barn / garage like singer for AE86 drift.
Oh. Hear me out. Don't leave. Hear me out.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Dude, a singer Corolla.
Now, you might be able to, or buy a shell, AE86 shell, put that VIN number on there, on that chassis.
Talking about re-VINning it?
It technically is a crime, I think. Maybe. But, yeah. I mean, if you get enough components, I don't know, put the roof on there.
And this fenders. This is all you're explaining that this to them at the bank?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like rubbing my teeth. I'm grinding my teeth. I'm like, we got to start a business, man. Yeah. No, but I look, maybe the target audience is people who just want to build like a drift car or something and need like spare shells. Mm. I don't know. Mm. It is kind of weird though.
Maybe our guest can give us some more insight. Maybe it's for movie production and they need, for some reason, 15 AE86s for the Initial D live action movie.
Didn't they make an Initial D movie recently?
I think so.
I believe there's one coming down the pipeline. Isn't Sun Kang attached to it?
That's Sun Kang.
Yeah.
Hit these guys up.
Yep.
That's the key. That's what it's for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of wrecking a bunch of like legit 80 Corollas that people are going to lose their mind over.
Yeah. No.
Jimmy would be sad if you heard about that. That's right. Maybe this is just for Sun Kang.
What if you took all the underpinnings of a Miata and put it in one of these shells? Would that be sick?
I could see that. I think there'd probably be not a huge... I mean, it would definitely feel different. I don't know. I think part of the charm of the 86, though, is that kind of the primitive underpinnings of the car.
Yeah.
The solid axle it's got, the geometry in the front, that gives it the characteristic handling. Sure. You know, that people love about these things.
If you want to learn more about A86s, then watch our video. It's awesome.
It's really sick.
So much that went behind.
Dude, that was a crazy shoot, by the way. That was like the hottest day of the year.
But we shot at night.
We shot it. It was still hot as balls, though. But getting out there to the shoot where it was out in Little Tujunga, and oh my, did I tell you guys on this podcast about how I got there?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Dude.
Helicopter?
Okay. No. I wish. So it's the day of the shoot. Justin and I are going to carpool because there's like not a ton of parking at the location. So we ride together and I call him. And he's like, he dropped off his dog, Edgar, at the house, back at his house. He's coming back and I call him up. He's like, oh yeah, we can take my truck, but do you want to take the Impulse, his Isuzu Impulse that he had like just finished building?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure, man. That sounds fun. He gets there and I forgot that the car does not have air conditioning.
Yeah.
But I get into the car and he starts it up. There's a super long like noise. I'm like, Justin, what's that? He's like, oh, it's the fuel pump. It's probably gonna die.
No.
It's gonna die soon. And I was like, thinking in my head, it's a 2-hour drive. Like, not distance wise, but you know, going up from Inglewood to the valley is like not a short drive. And also it's like rush hour traffic. It's gonna take us 2 hours. Yeah. It's 110 degrees out. No AC. I'm just thinking, as I'm putting on my seatbelt, I'm like, this is going to fucking suck.
Why didn't you just call it there and be like, let's just take a car with AC?
Because Justin seemed confident that the car would make it.
I know how you feel getting in your friend's shit box and like they're so confident. You're like, all right, dude, this is kind of like one of your duties as a car enthusiast friend is to just humor their bad decisions.
So we're driving down like Slauson or something, and the headliner starts like coming off
because it's so hot the glue's probably melting.
It's
like,
but well, it's also an old ass car, so it's just been breaking down anyway. But then, you know, we have the windows down to cool ourselves off, so it's just like blowing the headliner off, and like all the foam, the ancient foam, is like crystallized now, and it's just like blowing everywhere. Like, all I'm just covered in this fine foam dust, and like these big chunks are like flying into our face. I'm like, Justin, we have to do something about this. So he pulls over, we rip it out, and like, luckily that stopped it from happening. No more foam. But I was just like, I was thinking like, dude, I'm going to have like lung cancer or something.
It's asbestos foam.
I don't even know what it was. So yeah, anyway, things are going great after that. We're driving up the 405.
Yeah.
Until we get to like the section where the Getty is, where it's going through that valley, right? And the car starts like sputtering. We're in the carpool lane and Justin pulls off to the left and like we let the car chill there. And that's when I was like, okay, let's just call it. Like, let's just go home because this is going to suck.
You're still within earshot of like calling a tow truck. And
oh yeah. I mean, yeah. I was just thinking like this, okay, like we'll miss the shoot, whatever. It's worth it. But the car fires back up again. And Justin's like, want to try? And I was like, fuck, I guess. Anyway, we break.
Is the fuel pump still screaming?
It's still screaming. The thing is like, it's an external fuel pump on the gas tank. And like we'll call it the track temperature, the road temperature is probably like 140 degrees.
Yeah.
It's like so hot outside. And even like my side of the car was not in the sun the whole way, but like I couldn't put my hand on the door
because
it was so hot just from the ground. So we thought that maybe like the fuel pump was overheating.
Yeah.
Anyway, we break down like 5-6 more times on the way there. Shin, one of our camera PA guys, he's right over there. Bless his heart, was like staying with us the whole time. And like making sure Shin was driving a high truck. We eventually put a tow strap because we're like a mile from the chute. But Shin, he's opening a door on the truck, and I see like a case fall out that's labeled Sony A7S.
Oh,
and I'm like,
God, dude.
I'm like, wait a minute. Does Shin have all the cameras? And one of our producers, she's coming down, and she's like, Shin, you got to get to set, dude. Like, Shin was a little late with the cameras. And had I known that, I would have been like, dude, just like get to set. Don't give a shit about us. Like, the cameras take precedence. We're just side characters in this. Anyway, so the shoot otherwise went on without a hitch. It was a really great time.
Is that why you show up in the video like halfway through?
Yeah, because we're just like so late and just whatever. It was really hot, but also great video. Initial D, check it out.
Such a fun video.
Yeah. Moving on.
So, big news. McLaren announced its next Halo car on Sunday. Mm-hmm. It's called the W1, and it takes the company's One Series to the next level. A few quick facts about it. It's got 1,258 horsepower from a 4-liter V8 hybrid that revs to 9,200 RPM, insane. The engine alone makes 916 horsepower. Added electric motor makes 342 horsepower on top of that.
Very cool.
This thing is an insane beast. No one should be able to drive this car.
It looks sick as hell, too.
So this car is designed with racing in mind, obviously. We don't expect too many owners will actually race it, but maybe some social media stars will get some pictures
with
it.
I think this would be really cool if, like some oil sheiks buy them and then just, like, race them through Beverly Hills and run a bunch of stop signs.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be most of the 399 examples that will be built. It has two different race modes, GP and Sprint mode. GP ensures consistent electric motor power for repeatable performance, whereas the Sprint mode maxes out the electric motor for one power lap for situations like qualifying. When you're qualifying in your Invitational.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, taking my McLaren W1 to a Speed Ventures event.
Yeah.
I'm just like crushing guys. Yeah.
Bringing it to the autocross.
Yeah. It's you and then like a Jaguar and then like a Corolla.
Yeah. See, okay. I think this thing will look better in person.
It's kind of got that like really mean squinty eye look that a lot of modern supercars have. Like the new Bugatti has that same look where they've really slimmed down the headlights and they've just made it look a little LEDs. Madder.
Let's go back to an exterior shot real quick.
The only thing I take issue with is the seats that look like they've been sprayed with rust.
Yeah. So the front end, a lot of people, the initial reactions that people had to this was like that it looks like a Lycan Hypersport.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a fake
supercar.
Which
it's not real.
They made 7 of them.
They made a couple. I actually want to revisit.
It's the W Motorsports that they never made any of those.
I want to revisit that. I want to do a video revisiting that.
Mm. We're going to catch heat from that one guy that makes videos in his airplane hangar.
Here's the twist. Maybe we'd work with him.
Whoa.
Just like how Hobbs ends up working with Shaw. Yeah.
To get the Lycan Sport out of the skyscraper. Okay. Full circle. Andy Gill worked on that movie.
Nothing sadder than locking a beast in a cage.
Anyway, so yeah, the front end does admittedly look a bit Lycan Hypersport-esque, but I think if the bottom bumper there wasn't painted black and you got to see more of how the lines looked, I don't think it would look too much like that way. Anyway, from the back three-quarter view, that looks, I mean, very McLaren. Almost like futuristic P1-esque on the rear end there, which I like a lot. The P1 was, remember when the 918 Spider came out and the LaFerrari and this all came out around the same time? That was probably like 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago now. P1 is my favorite. Mm. I really wanted to drive one of those things. Still have not got to. I will eventually drive a P1.
The side ducts kind of look like that C8. Body
they are a little angry. Yeah, every from the top view on this side, it looks a lot more McLaren-esque with that swoosh there.
Yeah,
but yeah, I see what you mean, Joe. But man, this thing is sick, and it looks like it's in the long tail configuration. So that wing on the back there comes down at certain speeds to help reduce drag and all that.
There's an animation on their website that shows the different positioning for the active aero, and it's actually really sick. There it is. Whoop.
That's sick.
Oh, I love angles. It.
So cool, man.
It's really cool.
Rear wheel drive, which Zach Brown in the promotional video for this is like, power going to the rear wheels, brother. He doesn't say brother, but like that's like the vibe.
That's the sentiment.
That's the vibe you get.
But what's up with these seats, though? Does it like the? It looks like digital splatter almost for anyone listening on audio.
Looks interesting. I don't know. McLaren interiors. When we drove, so a couple like years ago now, probably a year or so ago, we did a Omaze ad where they were giving away a McLaren, what was it? The GT is the model, I think. I think it's called just GT. And it's like the comfortable McLaren.
Yeah.
But still, you get in and it's like very sports car. But it reminded me of like.
Portland won it? Or is it like Pacific Northwest?
That was the 570 that we gave away years ago,
and he was like, I'm just gonna sell it.
Yeah. So sitting in a McLaren, these new ones feels very much like the only thing I could think of was like driving like an Android phone, like a nice Android phone, just like in the way that the design is like it's not
watch
a nice Android phone. I'm saying like something that Marquez Brownlee would be like, this is the best phone you can buy. Like, it's just like so focused, but also just there's this like quality of life features that you're just like feeling are missing, even though that was in that car specifically was like the road trip McLaren, the comfortable McLaren.
Yeah,
still felt very racing focused. But I don't know. The more I see McLaren, the more I'm like really into the idea. Especially in West LA, there's like a few people who drive 720s or 765s, and I love those.
I think
I was ever fabulously wealthy, that would probably be my supercar of choice. I think. Even though I've heard, what's that?
No, Nolan is a McLaren guy.
McLaren would be like fabulously wealthy, and then ungodly wealthy is Pagani, obviously. But I don't know. I really like these cars, and I like McLaren has been taking a bunch of swings just with the collector editions that they have, like their Elva, the Roadster one that doesn't have a roof or anything. It just has a windscreen. That's super cool.
Yeah.
There's the Speedtail as well, which is also a 7 series kind of variant, but like, focus on top speed.
I don't think we ever aired this, but Alexander Rossi gave me a drive in the McLaren Artura, and that I think is the budget friendly version. It's kind of pared down. It's got like 600 horsepower, which
it's probably got the same a similar hybrid system to that. They're probably using that to develop the hybrid system for the W1.
And he was going like 150 miles per hour on the bridge in Long Beach.
Oh yeah, that's sick.
It was insane. And just like whipping it in full traffic and like having a conversation like we're talking now. I was like, what's your favorite sandwich? he's like, oh, I don't know. Just scaring the shit out of me. But even the pared down version of McLaren cars are awesome.
Yeah, they're cool, man. I got to ride one time in a 765, not LT. It might have been an LT. It was the owner like spec'd it out for the track. So it had the carbon fiber seats and like 6-point harnesses. And yeah, Same thing. Like, McLaren owners are crazy. They go, he was going like 130 in traffic, like on the 60.
Because it takes nothing to get up to 130.
And I was like, I don't even know you, dude.
Yeah.
Speaking of McLarens, did you guys see Jack Doherty, the public nuisance streamer, crashed his over the weekend? If you don't know, this guy's kind of regarded as one of the biggest pieces of shit on social media. He's known for harassing people in public, and then when they try to defend themselves, he hides behind his bodyguards.
Oh, that's why everyone was saying, having all the bodyguard comments. Like
So he was live streaming while driving in the rain on his phone, and he hydroplanes the car, crashes into a wall, and then his friend is just like bleeding out of his face.
And he's like, hey, dude, hold the camera. He's like, get this. And then he like reacts to his car.
Yeah.
It's so annoying.
Yeah.
It's just.
So he's a. Yeah, and so his friend is bleeding, and then he makes him hold the camera and everything. So we're going to actually show that video a little bit later, and we're going to have our guest, the professional stunt coordinator, Andy Gill, break down what
went wrong. Dude, that was. Yeah, that was a pretty wild video to watch. Feel bad for that his friend or his camera guy. It's like, get out of that situation, man. That's not a good relationship.
You can tell the dude's got a concussion.
Yeah,
he's like, oh, what? Yeah.
For real. And
they deleted the video right away. He got banned from Kick.
Which says a lot, because Kick is like the one where all the racist guys go.
Yeah, that's true.
That is, it's wild, man. But also, like, the instinct for him to be immediately like, we got to get the thumbnail or whatever, like the shots and everything. I was like, I hope
I like I your get. Hustle, dude.
No, but I think like creators watch, like at least me watching that, I'll be honest. I was like, yeah, there's been situations where like something breaks or like some crazy shit goes down and it's like immediately like get the shot, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like when you're doing that for so, like that's your job, especially he's a streamer. Mm-hmm. So streaming, I think, is so much different than being like a YouTuber primarily, like what we do,
where you only have like, one shot.
You only have one shot, but also like that, I feel like streaming takes up more of your life, because like a lot of those guys will do it for much longer periods.
Yeah.
And like they're doing their real life streams where they're just like in public documenting, in his case, crashing their car.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, it just shows like when you're in that, when that's your career, like that just becomes an automatic response. If something crazy happened, get the camera out and going. I don't care if my friend is bleeding from his forehead and is obviously concussed. Like, and
especially if you've been doing it probably for as long as he has, since he was a kid. I mean, that's all you know.
And I'm not defending him. Like, obviously, and that's it. Dude, when someone's bleeding, like, that...
Stop the stream.
Number one...
Just stop.
First of all, don't be on your phone in your McLaren.
Yeah.
Second of all, in the rain, streaming it. Looking at chat is what I assume he was doing.
He was looking at chat.
So it's just like so many other factors. But like at that point, your buddy's bleeding from the head. Maybe turn the camera off.
Yeah.
You know?
Not to mention the other cars on the freeway that he's putting at risk just by doing totally. That.
Yeah.
Awful.
He's lucky he didn't hit anybody else. Yeah. All right. So that's the news this week. But here's our chat with Andy Gill.
He's won 21 awards. He's an accomplished stunt coordinator. He's been around the business forever. Let's jump into
it. I hear he's even seen Vin Diesel naked.
We'll find out.
All right, with us today is award-winning stunt driver and stunt coordinator with hundreds of movie credits under his belt. It's the one and only Andy Gill. Andy, welcome to the studio.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's going to be fun. I love talking about cars anytime.
Absolutely. Andy, you've worked on a ton of movies, including most of the Fast and Furious movies, Black Panther, Knight Rider. How long have you been doing this?
42 years now.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah, long time.
How'd you start out?
I'm one of the lucky ones. Nepotism. My brother got in the business for me. He called me up one day and said, I lived in Atlanta, Georgia, and he moved out to California. He said, move your ass out here and get in the business. And I did. The one thing I did that I still hate was I had a 77 TA 6.6 Trans Am.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Buccaneer red, had the Screaming Eagle on it, everything else, and I traded it for $1,000 in a van.
Wow.
Oh, no. Yes. So you could haul stuff?
So I could haul stuff.
Yeah.
I miss that car. I've tried to find it again. It had black interior. It was a great car.
What was the first production you worked on? Where you just started out as just a stunt performer? I mean, I imagine I looked at your IMDb. So back in early 80s, correct?
Yeah, 82 was my first job.
What was the production and what was that like?
It was Knight Rider.
Knight Rider.
Yeah, first thing I ever had to do, my brother called me up and said, all right, come over this weekend. We're going to do some cable off some motorcycles.
Whoa.
Okay. So we went out in the desert with some of his motorcycles, and he showed me how to attach a cable to the front end, go around the axle so it would suck the front end down when he came to the end of the cable.
Oh, God.
And I would run to the end of it at like 10 miles an hour, and they kept getting the speed up and speed up until I was doing about 25, 30.
Oh, my God.
And you're just going
to boom, and it just catapults you off and spits you.
How many times can you do that before
you got to tap out?
We were in sand and everything else, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't, because you can control yourself coming off. That's what I was learning.
Have the standards changed since then in terms of what they put the stuntmen through, or is it pretty much the same? You just ragdoll them until they can't no more?
No, it's changed. It's changed a lot. We didn't have the ability to put pads down back then. Like they do now, because now they can paint them out. They can do a lot of things. Back then, you just had to take it. And you took the precautions you could. Like if you're doing a gnarly cable off, a lot of times you'll slightly cut the handlebars. So if your knees catch on them, they break away. So they don't just
slam
your legs.
So are you like mostly titanium now?
Came through fairly unscathed. I got this one. Insert car ran over me. Tore this muscle, broke the fluid sac here.
Didn't know we had fluid sacs there.
yeah. Then I got a big Z one here where I shattered this bone here, and they had to take bone out of my hip to do this one.
Wow.
That one then compressed L2 and 3 and broke my tailbone. All in the same one. Other than that, I've been pretty good. Still got good knees, still got good hips.
That's good luck.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So let's back up a little bit. What was your background before stunt performing? How did you know that you wanted to do that sort of thing? Like, what, I guess, convinced you? What factors were present already that were like, this seems like a good fit. This seems like something I want to do.
Always active. My brother and I, my sister even, were always active. She rode horses all her life. We race motorcycles.
Gotcha.
So we got into motocross, did all that. I played football. I just loved active things that taxed my body, I guess. I mean, because I loved hitting the ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you pop right back up and go again. And motocross, I just loved the thrill of the excitement of the jumps and the slides and we'd ride all day long. Mm-hmm. And then I got into cars. I mean, growing up, as a kid, all I ever wanted for Christmas was slot cars. I mean, I'd play with slot cars all the time.
Yeah.
Then my first car I bought was a 71 240Z.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
Started building that, and then I got the Trans Am, and then I sold all that and moved out to California.
Very cool.
But it turned out pretty good for me. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious, kind of, you know, you go from chucking yourself off of motorcycles, and then you're doing full-blown stunt coordinating for movies. What's the trajectory there? And what's the difference in that?
Big difference. I mean, I was lucky enough that when I got on Knight Rider, it was an era where a lot of action and a lot of TV shows. So I would work Knight Rider. I would work Fall Guy. I'd work Riptide. So I was constantly learning my craft and doing, and luckily back then it was more of a boys club than a business. In the fact that when you'd go to a set on a TV show, yes, they had a script, but the stunt coordinator would redesign things and to fit that location and the tools he had. And then he would ask you, hey, we're going to do this today. And that's what you do. Like one day, Mickey Gilbert was coordinating Fall Guy. And I showed up one morning and he said, hey, Andy, come walk with me. So I walked with him and we were in a section behind LA Airport that was closed down way back then. All the houses were being demolished. They were clearing them out.
You can still see those old cul-de-sacs there when you're flying over the old neighborhood there.
Yeah. So we're going to work there. And he walks me over to this house and there's just this big pile of dirt in front of it. And he goes, what's that look like to you? I went, looks like a jump ramp to me. And he goes, you think you could jump a car off that and hit on the roof of the house? I went, yeah, probably. And he passed me on the back and goes, you're first up.
Oh, my God.
And he walks away. And I'm thinking, I thought he was kidding. So I'm looking at it going, maybe I, but can I really jump a car off this? But we did.
And you landed on the roof?
Landed on the roof.
How did that, like, doesn't that compress your back? Is that where you broke your back?
No, whenever you do car jumps like that, we had something that my brother and a couple other guys developed when he was doing Dukes of Hazzard and stuff. It's called a waist harness. It just goes around your waist. There's no leg straps or anything. And you cinch it down like a corset. And it's got clips here. You put bungee wrap on the top of the roll bar,
yeah.
And you clip in, and then you suck yourself down with your 5 points.
Whoa.
So your butt's about this far off the seat.
Oh, wow.
So you have that cush.
Interesting.
When you hit.
Wow. That's smart.
Yeah.
It's like a Hans device, but for your full body.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Wow. It's anytime you jump a car, you're hitting, and it's a hard hit.
Yeah.
Imagine so.
A lot of guys put water bottles all taped together underneath the seat. Some guys take the seat out and put air tubes in them.
Wow.
Yeah, all different things. We just used hang harnesses.
I was always curious because you see those jumps, like the Dukes of Hazzard jumps, and they still do mm-hmm. those every year where it's just big. Like, you know, 30 feet in the air and then just hard ground.
Hard ground.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they have hang harnesses.
Yeah. Wow.
The waist harness.
Wow. With that scenario where you're talking about the big dirt pile into the house, was there any sort of how much science and calculation went into it, or were you just kind of like eyeballing it, like, I think I need to go 55?
Back then, totally eyeball and experience.
Sick.
And at that point, I jumped cool. a Knight Rider car a bunch of times. So you kind of know what a car is going to do and whether it's going to compress on the ramp or whether it's just going to ride off and drop. So you look at it, and it's just experience and talking to getting Mickey's input and getting his son Timmy's input, because Timmy jumped the Fall Guy truck so many times you can't even count. Wow. So
today I would imagine there's a lot more calculations and planning that goes into it. Do they ever eyeball it still, or is it all pretty by the books?
A lot of it is not by the books, because every single time you do it, it's different. Mm-hmm. It's the grade of the road. It's the setup of the car. It's the weight of the car. It's how long your ramps can be, how you're hiding them, everything takes an effect. So you take your experience and what you've done before and try to put it all together and come up with the speed that you're going to hit the ramp in order to get the projection you want for camera. A lot of times they don't want you to jump as far as you think you should jump it. It's like, no, I want it to land right here where camera is. So you have to adjust things. Okay, so maybe I come off a little bit. Maybe I do this. You know, do you want the car? What angle do you want the car in the air? We did one on Fast and Furious 9 where they jumped the Ford, and it was across dividers.
Yeah.
And the director was adamant that he didn't want it a clean jump. He wanted it nose down.
Hmm.
He said, "Yeah, it's got to be dirty. It can't look." Like a, you know, Dukes of Hazzard jump or a Fall Guy jump. I want this.
Oh, cool.
So we designed it so it would compress a lot, and we didn't put any weight in the back end, so it would
kind of come up. Opposite of a Baja truck then, basically.
Yeah.
So that it does,
Yeah, we took a lot of rebound out of it, so it would really come up, and it did. It came over like that. First time.
The GT500?
No, it was the rally car.
The Escort?
Oh, Escort.
Okay.
RS-1600.
Yeah, the Escort.
So on that subject, when you see a classic car like the Escort get just demolished, does a little part of you die?
Oh, every time.
Yeah.
Every time. It's like, oh, my God, I don't want to do this to these cars.
How many cars do you think you wrecked in just the Fast and Furious movies that you've worked on?
Thousands. I mean, on Fast 8, I think it was 310.
Was that the one where they're flying off the, the building?
Yeah.
How do you coordinate 300 cars getting destroyed at once?
It's fun. that was the zombie car sequence. In the zombie car sequence, we had, they went out and bought, I forgot how many, it was 100 and something cars that they took the engines, transmissions, everything out of. They put air tubes in them so they could fire them off these ramps. Inside this parking structure, out the windows and down.
What do you mean by air tubes? How does that propel?
It's a big accumulator tank filled with air.
Yeah.
And it's got a pipe on it about that long. That's 10-15 feet long, and then they weld a tube inside the car, and they slide that tube onto this tube.
Okay.
And then when they release the air,
imagine like a Hot Wheel attached to a Nerf dart, basically.
Yeah. In my head, basically. It was like a jet engine, but it's actually like thrusting off of.
So it's like those, more like rockets used to stomp on the thing and it would shoot the rocket up in the air. But it's kind of like that.
Yeah. Nice. I hurt myself. My knee bent backwards trying to stomp one of those rockets one time. That's my stunt.
So you got 100 cars with compressed air. And are they all launching simultaneously?
No, the director actually wanted Spiro Rosato, second director, had it in his mind that exactly when he wanted each one launched. So they would all come out at different times in different areas.
Wow.
So his camera could catch them and this car wouldn't block this car and everything else.
Oh, very cool.
So, yeah, so FX put it on a remote control timer. As soon as they pushed the button, one time it was done, and then in milliseconds the other one, they would all fire.
Cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
What do you do with all those cars?
They go to the dump.
Can they? I mean, can they take cars in that quantity all at once? I mean, that's wild to me, just having to transport that many.
Oh
car
my God!
You,
on a second, you know, on Fast and Furious, it's a circus. It's 10 circuses. It's I don't know how many semis full of cars that have to be placed. Like when we did Fast 10 in Rome, that was one of the biggest concerns, was where do we place all the equipment trucks that need to carry all this. So we ended up getting the whole bottom area where they used to do the chariot races, now kind of a park.
Whoa, and they, what?
Yeah. Whoa. And they parked all the trucks down there, and they had to take the cars. It was probably 25 or 30 different cars that we needed to use in that sequence, and put them specifically around the areas close enough that when we needed them, they could get them there within minutes instead of 30 minutes to go all the way down there, get it through traffic. That's back up here.
Insane coordination.
It is insane coordination.
Wow.
Especially when in Rome, and like in Rome, we were allowed 2.5-3 hours per section.
Yeah.
Then they had to open it up again. So you had to get things done pretty quick.
Sure.
Yeah, set up and everything.
So some news came out last week that Keanu Reeves drove in his first professional race. Do you see this confidence in actors that, like, they just can do these stunts, or just, like, these stunts that you coordinate? This is a really roundabout thing. How do I phrase this?
There are a lot of actors. Like, Keanu does his own stunts. Tom Cruise famously does his own stunts.
There are capable actors, and there are others that aren't. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
Some people just don't understand how a car works and they're never going to get there. Other ones end up learning and being okay. Other ones are great at it.
Yeah.
And it just depends on the actor. When you get them in the car, if they have any experience at all, especially if they ride motorcycles, then they usually know how a car works and they can feel it. And to be a good driver, you need to feel the car.
Sure.
You need to know how it sets. You need to know all that stuff so you can be ahead of it. Keanu's good and great in the car. He did good for his first time racing.
Experience. Yeah, 25 out of 35, I think.
So. Well, it's not bad. I mean, you're not going to jump in there and be in the top 10.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to, it's a learning experience just like anything. But he's got a lot of skills. He can slide cars. He can drift cars. A lot of guys can, but that's the next level when you start going into racing. That's the high end. And a lot of the my drivers came from the racing world and then moved into stunts.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them really good at what they do.
Do you work with a lot of people that are just like jack of all trades, like they're precision drivers, they're stunt drivers, they also can do, you know, stunts with their body?
It's changed through the years. When I came into it, there wasn't the need or the money to hire multiple stunt persons for one actor.
Yeah.
Nowadays you'll have 8 stunt doubles for the lead.
Wow.
Because one will be a car guy, one will be a high fall guy, one will be a motorcycle guy.
Yeah.
One will be a fight guy. It just goes on and on.
Yeah.
And, so that's changed. What's changed in my world is all the guys that I use, we've been together for at least 30 years. So they're all around guys, but they don't hit the ground anymore. Yeah. They're my age, and they're like, yeah, put me in a car.
Yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, I keep them all in the car because I'll have Steve Kelso or Henry Kenji or my brother driving the cars. And then anytime I need them, the actor looking person to run out, I'll have a stunt double that is actually his size and looks like him.
Yeah.
Get out of the car, run, tackle some guy to the ground. So it's, yeah, I still use other people.
That's interesting.
Speaking of stunt double, I was looking on your IMDb, just giving that a glance, and I saw that you worked on The Rock, and it's on IMDb at least, you're listed as Sean Connery's stunt double.
I did double him. Yeah. I drove the Hummer. Awesome. I did all that chase. What did I do on that? I think that's it for that one. I was coordinating that one. He actually also threw me. I was doubling the guy that he threw off the building.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I had to get thrown off that building with a wire. No airbag below me.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of scary.
Did you actually film at Alcatraz for those stunts?
Yes, we did.
Wow.
Yeah, Alcatraz was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah, we were there about a month and a half, I guess.
Wow.
That's really cool. Yeah. So it's kind of obvious in movies when a company, like a car company, is sponsoring the movie. Like Audi was in Minority Report.
I'm real.
I wonder.
I know. That's the only thing I can think
Black
of.
Black Panther, I think, was one of them.
Yeah. Lexus and Black Panther. Yeah. Is it difficult being the stunt coordinator and kind of telling these companies, like, we're going to have to dirty your car up. We're going to have to crash it. Because they want it to probably look pristine. Yeah.
That luckily, I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah.
I do deal with it in a little bit with the directors. The directors like their cars clean for some reason. Yeah. I like them like gone in 60 seconds. If it gets crashed and it keeps going, use it just like it is. Cool. Don't fix it. So I argue with that all the time.
Yeah.
Like Dodge for Fast and Furious, as long as it looks heroic, they're fine with it.
Interesting.
Cool. I was just about to bring up Twisters, I think, is a great example of the dirtying the car kind of phenomenon with the, both in the original one and the latest one. Those Dodges get pretty messed up and they just keep going and they look awesome.
Yeah, they do. I mean, on Fast, what was it? Fast 7. Dom is in his Charger and he's surrounded by the bad guys and he just runs it off the cliff and boom, all the way down the bottom. Dodge was happy with it. As long as he's survives it and he looks like a hero,
yeah,
have at it.
Was somebody in that car when it was tumbling down, or you guys just sent it off? All
right. It's essential that we have a driver in there.
Two dummies in it. Yeah, no, we didn't put anybody in that one.
No, they got soft hands now. They would have done it like that back in the day.
Back in my day. Yeah, no.
Would have done it for free.
Yeah. That's right. I would have paid them to let me ride that down.
Three takes of it, too.
No roll cage. Yeah, we used to do turnovers without roll cages.
Jeez.
Oh, God.
Yeah. They weren't like today's turnovers. Yeah. They were just little, tiny little over to the side, the roof things.
Why did you feel comfortable doing it without a roll cage back then?
Because guys before me had done them safely. As long as you kept to the parameters, then it was going to be all right.
What's the key to not getting hurt?
Grab strap.
Oh, yeah.
Grab strap in this seat, and so when you go, you just pull yourself to the seat.
Oh, really?
That's crazy.
Yeah. Whoa.
Wow. You just lean over so the roof doesn't crush you.
Yeah. I had to do, I've probably done 2 or 3 where you shear the roof off of a car.
Yeah.
Go under a semi, go under so-and-so, and you put a grab strap in. You don't want to be late.
Cool.
No.
Yeah, there's this Russian stuntman on Instagram who's always, like, driving under semis.
Yeah, I've seen
that
guy.
He just did one where he drove a bird scooter under a moving semi.
Oh, no.
Do you ever see people on social media doing stunts like that? And I guess I'm curious what your reaction is. Is it, like, badass, or do you think it's like, you're going to get hurt?
A little bit of both. It's badass that they're doing it, but there is no room for error.
Yeah. Is that a viable way to get into the stunt industry, do you think? Because, you know, you mentioned...
To a point. It just depends on how ludicrous the stunt is. If they put something up that, let's say it's a guy driving his Lambo, and he loses control and rolls it 6 times. No. That's not what we want.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but if it's a guy that says, I'm going to turn this over. I'm going to go up this bank and do this. And he sets the car upright and everything else. And he does it. And yeah, okay, this guy's got some skills. He knew exactly what he was going to do. He did it. Yeah. So it's you got to look at it and kind of come from that point of view. That, yeah. All right.
I'm just curious, like what the trajectory is to get into stunts, you know, currently. And I would imagine social media plays some part.
A lot. Really? Oh yeah. My daughter hires most of the people on Fast Now for me. Cause I'm just too busy with all the political part of it, with doing meetings and going on location.
Bureaucracy.
Yeah. It's constant.
Yeah.
And she knows a lot of the stunt world, and I'll tell her, look, we need something different. Find me somebody like Fast 10. Find me something different that you've never seen on a motorcycle. Because the director said, I don't want the same stuff that I always see. Mm-hmm. So that we always get that. I came back one day, and she goes, I think I found somebody. I don't know if you've seen it, but I've never seen it. And it was R2 Steinberg. And it's the stunt in there where he does the nose wheelie on the motorcycle, does a bunny hop, 360.
Oh, yes.
All in one.
Yeah.
And he's from Finland. And so I went, get a hold of him and just talk to him and find out. So she gets a hold of him. And she goes, I talked to him at length. He says he can do it. It takes him a while to get set up to do it. But once he does it, he said he can do it over and over again.
That's awesome.
So I said, he can do this in one take. She goes, yeah, that's what he says. And I said, do you have his sizes? Because there's a girl that's doing it.
Yeah.
And he just happened to be this little guy.
Oh, nice.
Would fit. And so now I got to go to production and say, I got this great gag. And I go to the director, show it to him, and he loved it. And he goes, absolutely, I want that in my film, this and the other. So now I got to fight now I'm going to be doubling a woman with a guy. Mm-hmm. So I have two other female riders. And so I go to them and I said, here's the gag. I want you guys working on it as long as you can work on it. And if you get there at the time, then you guys can do it. But when we get closer, if you can't do it, then I'm going to have to bring R2 in. And Debbie right off the bat said, I'm not even going to try it. I know I'm not going to be able to do it. And the other old Brittany said, I'll give it a shot. Oh, and I had Crystal too, Crystal Hooks. Crystal said, I'll give it a shot. I'll do the best I can. And Brittany said, I'll try it a little bit. And they tried for a while. And Crystal said, I don't think I'm ever going to get it. It's really hard to do.
Yeah, it seems
really. And so we brought R2 in, and he was phenomenal.
Awesome.
And the beauty about all of them is none of them have egos that, hey, you're taking my job. That's the whole family on Fast is I can exchange people. I can exchange drivers that have been driving all their life for me. If I have my brother in a car and I need the car to drift, then I'll take him out because he can drift, but he just can't drift like other guys can drift. I'll put Jeff Groff in, great drifter. And so he'll do a shot. And it makes things go quicker, makes things go smoother, safer, because you can change guys in and out for whatever shot you need. Mm-hmm. You know, if I need cannons, then it's down to like three guys that they've got so many under their belt, and you're putting millions of dollars in this one shot.
And a cannon is when a car gets launched a little bit?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. Yeah, they'll come in at 60 miles an hour, pitch it sideways, hit the cannon, God. And boom.
Jeez.
And it's not just pitching the cannon and doing it. It's pitching the cannon in an exact mark, getting it turned exactly so we know where the car's going, because we have cameras at the other end that want to pick up the end.
Yeah.
So to give that to a young guy that's never done a cannon and done one, opposed to giving this guy's done 60.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. If there's a shot where it's five cannons all at once, which we had on Fast and Furious 8, I think, cop cars coming in. Yeah, you can give the new guys some room to get in there and get one under them, because now it's not just everything concentrated on this story point of this one thing. It's just five cars wrecking.
Yeah.
So if they miss their mark a little bit, if they go off track a little bit, they got some experience, they got a good wreck, and it doesn't matter as much.
Cool.
So as a coordinator, I have to make those choices and move people around. And
so this, the role on Skyfall that broke the record for number of car rolls, I think it was like 14 or something. Yeah, the Aston Martin.
No, it was seven.
Seven.
14. Right, I'm way
double. Okay. But that kind of role, that driver is not just grabbing a strap and holding on, right? That they're fully locked
fully
in.
Fully locked in, 5-point roll cage, everything.
Wow. Yeah. And that's like they only have like one in them, right?
No.
They could do that multiple times?
Most of the time, yeah. Okay. Some of them hurt and enough that you probably wouldn't want the guy to do it again.
Yeah.
That car, it looked like it looked like he'd been fine.
Okay.
Some cars, it's just luck of the draw, some not how they hit.
Yeah.
It was a nice turnover. But they broke the world record on Fall Guy.
Really?
Yeah. 8.5.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They did it. Guy from Stunts Unlimited did it. And it took them 3 tries.
Wow.
Did one test. I think he got 5 or 6 rolls maybe. And it was on a sand beach, and they learned from that they needed to wait until the tide was retracting and the sand was harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it didn't slow him down. So that's another factor. He learned that the first time he pitched it too far and hit the button too late, because if you pitch a car, you have a cannon on this side.
Yeah.
As you pitch it this way at 60, 65 miles an hour, it's going to lift the car this way. So if you get all the way sideways, like a lot of people think you need to do.
It has less travel of the cannon.
It's not the travel of the cannon. It's the inertia of the car. Oh. So as it goes sideways, now you're 90 degrees already, and it lifts, it's still going to turn.
Oh.
So now it just does this.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is unweight the car, just get it going and fire it. So as the nose hits here, it gets sideways and goes.
You stay sideways then.
Stay sideways.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's fractions of seconds between feeling that set and starting to go and firing it, between going too early. Now it doesn't do anything, and it just does this and flops over.
Yeah.
So there's a tight window in there that you have to hit, and he did a great job.
And with the cannons, the driver, they are in control of when that activates?
Yes. Yes, they have. They're all different styles. Some guys have a foot switch. Some guys have it on the hand e-brake here. Some have it on e-brake and a big panic button, so they can't miss it. So they'll hit the e-brake, go sideways, and boom.
Wow.
So it's all different methods.
When it comes to records, is that something that you guys are not always on the hunt to break, but like if an opportunity comes up to break a record, is that something you actively go for, or is it just something that the director wants to?
I've never gone for it in my career. I don't know anybody, any other stunt people that have deliberately said, I'm going to break it until Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
And I think that was since the director, first unit director, was a stunt guy.
Mm.
And he had the Fall Guy series in his lap trying to make a feature out of it. He wanted to go big, and it was his vision. Hey, if we're going to go big and we're going to do this about stunt guys, then let's really go big and try to go for these records. Which he did, and they were successful.
That's really cool.
Speaking of social media, we have a clip that we'd like you to react to.
Context, yeah. So there's this this public nuisance live streamer named Jack Doherty who recently crashed his McLaren on the freeway over the weekend. It's getting a lot of buzz, and we're curious for your take on what he could have done differently to avoid crashing his McLaren.
Okay, let's take a look. It's raining.
Yep.
He's on his phone.
And this is live stream, by the way.
Yeah.
This is on the internet.
Wow. What he could have done? Not gotten up that morning. That probably would have been his best decision of the day. on his phone, it's raining. Yeah. He's passing cars.
Yeah.
So he's
what happened?
You can hear him throttle it.
Yeah.
Or right before he starts the hype show. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Downshift.
Yep, he did. That's all it takes. Yes, yes. It's over.
So then he.
Now, if he was thinking, it's already going, he should have kept with it, gassed it, and gone all the way around at 360. And just
360?
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Hey, if you're going to crash, you're going to crash.
Yeah. So.
Give it a shot.
If you're at
I did that. I had my Viper about.
Oh, wow.
2 months. Same thing.
Really? What kind of Viper?
It's a 2006 Dodge Viper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still have it. Yeah, it's great. I love it. But I hadn't had it long, and I hadn't really learned about what it can do.
Or not.
And I was working nights down in Long Beach, and it was about 4 in the morning. I get off, starts raining but lightly, and I'm coming on the on-ramp. Luckily, nobody on the freeway. So as I'm coming around like that, I see there's no taillights, nothing else. So I just go, romp it. Bad idea in a Viper.
Oh, no.
Boom. It starts going around. I go around. Boom, all around. Catch it. Get to go and go down the road.
Beautiful 360.
Yeah. Go down the road.
That's badass.
I went 55 all the way home.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a butt pucker right there.
Yeah, that's a butt pucker. Let me tell you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of ragdolling and doing some stunts around here. Joe recently had a little incident.
Yeah, I want to tell you, like,
yeah,
this was a planned stunt that I had. this is me crashing, but I want to know if, like, I have any potential in the industry.
No, let's back up. Joe, you were riding a pit bike in the parking lot.
Yeah, this is the parking lot. This is Friday. No one told me that the throttle cable was malfunctioning, and so I was like,
wait a minute. Who knew the throttle cable was malfunctioning?
They're not in this room right now.
I had no idea.
But the three people that drove it before me figured it out and didn't tell me. So,
they set you up.
They set me up. It turned out all right. I'm fine.
You have nice friends.
But I just wanted to, like, let me know if I have any potential in the stunt world based off of this clip.
Okay.
Off to a great start.
Full throttle.
It sounds pretty good, pretty healthy.
So for our audio listeners, Joe is doing a U-turn at the end of the parking lot.
We're going to post this on the social for sure.
Is that a Tecumseh Indian? What is that?
I think.
Briggs and Stratton. Oh! God, flying W high side.
I high sided a pit bike at 10 miles per hour.
That's pretty good. I like that. Let me see it again. Did you hit the car?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a
the
big
bike
dent.
Did, and you did.
I dented the hood with my
big
head.
Big dent in our Civic
now. That's the hardest part of your body. It's probably a good thing.
I didn't want to hit the Civic and dent it with the bike. And so
how's the bike, though?
The bike is fine. It was still running when I put it down, too.
Okay.
One more time. Here.
That's a nice little high side. Feet out. Oh!
Oh, my God.
Nice.
Are you okay, Joe?
I'm totally fine. Okay. I have a huge bruise right here from the bumper.
Oh.
Yeah. And my hand kind of hurts because I also punched the hood.
Yeah.
But damn. I'm fine.
But wow. Your ego's good.
Oh, yeah. We had a good laugh for like 2 hours after it happened.
You should still frame it at the Flying W. Classic Flying W.
I'm just happy I didn't like fully scorpion on it. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't want to do that. That's why good you hit your head.
Yeah. Well, I think we're all out of time, Andy. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Glad to be here.
Thank you very much.
Amazing career. And if you've never seen Fast and Furious, go check it out.
It turns out with Fast and Furious, the real family was behind the scenes, the ones that were making the stunts happen.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. Do you want to plug anything?
Stunts Unlimited. I've been in Stunts Unlimited for 20 years now. A lot of the movies you see on the big screen and on TV are all done by Stunts Unlimited. It's a group of pro guys that all have the same ideals and how you go about keeping people safe and keeping the action high and what people want to see.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Andy.
All right.
Yeah, this is awesome.
You. Follow Nolan J. Sykes, Max Maddox, and I'm Joe J. Weber.
Yeah,
Joe J. Weber. Joe That's G. not my Weber. Name. Joe G. Weber. We'll see you next week. Thank you for watching.
Yeah. You did hit your head, didn't you? Yeah.